We made this.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Pick a Disc. I am your host Matt Latham, here to speak to someone about an album that they want to talk about. This time our guest is Colin from We Dig Music again, but this time he's actually picking an album, like an old school one, so he's doing the original thing. So considering how many times he's been on, this is his second album that he's probably picked. And the album he's picked is Astro Creep 2000, etc, etc, etc. I'm not going to say the whole thing, by White Zombie. We talk about White Zombie, we talk about Rob Zombie, we talk about the genre, we talk about metal, we talk about classifications of metal, and all sorts of different things to do with the album and stuff. And yeah, it was an interesting conversation. So before we speak to Colin, I just want to remember that if you're listening to me and you like us, then do what you got to do. Follow us on the socials under Pick a Disc. We've got a Facebook group called Pick a Disc. Review us on iTunes and all that kind of stuff. And if you are going to review us, just lie and say we're 5 stars. And I think that is it. I can't think of anything else to speak to you about. So let's speak to Colin. It's probably been at least a while, realistically, chronically, but you are now a member of the We Made This podcast network, Colin.
I am.
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
Yes. Yeah.
Me and my homies and my crew from We Dig Music in Free With This Month's issue have joined the dark side.
Yes, yes. I remember the announcement being made, and I think my reaction was, what are you doing, fool? Run! But no.
Seems fair. Seems
no,
fair.
No, it's glad to grow to an ever-growing community of
I'd been on here enough times that I thought I was basically pretty much practically on the network anyway.
Yeah, so awesome. Yeah, also it's good to finally boost up the music quota of the podcast. There's too many TV and film podcasts on there. Yeah.
Most of which appear to be directed by Chris Carter.
Yes. No, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
No, not at all.
Not at all. No, really, there is nothing wrong with that. He said panically. Talking about TV shows about the supernatural, to a band with a supernatural entity in their name.
Colin's just their name, in their very soul.
In their very soul. Colin's here yet again, because I can't get rid of him, to talk about another album that he's picked. But actually, this is actually the second album he's picked.
Yeah, the other two weren't normal episodes. One was yours.
Yeah.
And one was Christmas music.
Yes. One was the last minute attempt at a Christmas episode, which quite well. So, Colin, you're here again. Why don't you tell the lovely listeners the disc that you've picked?
I have picked the greatest metal album of all time, White Zombie's 1995 masterpiece, Astro Creep 2000, Songs of Love, Destruction and Other Synthetic Delusions of the Electric Head.
Sorry, I missed that. What was that again?
It was Astro Creep 2000, Songs of Love, Destruction and Other Synthetic Delusions of the Electric Head.
Sorry, I blanked out.
It's best not to ask what it means.
And the title backwards, please. Head Electric, the of Delusion, Synthetic, Other and Destruction, Love of Songs, yeah. 2000, colon, Creep, Astro.
Indeed.
Zombie White.
That's just the words in the wrong order. That's not backwards, because anyway.
Yes, moving on. Yeah, so this is the probably first heavy metal album that we covered on the podcast.
Well, we've had Limp Bizkit and Linkin Park, which are both the metal genre as a whole.
They're like the descendant, like in the kind of like,
yeah.
This is the next step up from the genealogical tree of metal.
Yeah, yes. So depending on who you ask, this album is either industrial metal or groove metal are pretty much the two genres that it fits into. You know, it's not like Metallica with complex guitar solos all over it. It's fairly straightforward, quite simple, but really, really dense with a lot of electronics.
It's got a lot in common with, like, say, pop punk in terms of, like, having less solos, more just, like,
there's definitely a massive punk attitude in there, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Not so much even the pop punk, just the punk. I mean, they come from White Zombie started out as they were a noise rock band in the 80s. They were formed in about, I think it was, like, 82. It was definitely early 80s in New York, and they started out as a noise rock band like early Sonic Youth. There's a lot of like the Cramps kind of thing in their sound. And it was only in the 90s or late 80s when Jay Younger joined, who was their guitarist on the two sort of well-known albums mm-hmm. that they did, that they sort of became a metal band.
Oh, okay. So this is kind of like, I think one of the reasons I think I did the podcast was to kind of start fitting missing links of chains in terms of music stuff, and this is kind of like one of the first leaps into this kind of aspect of the metal genre, anyway. Because yeah. I think, whilst not a heavy listener of metal, whenever I think of metal, or is like the rock and roll kind of like arena metal, of like like the glam rock kind more glam rock, where basically like. You watch Bill and Ted, and their version of metal is like Kiss.
And Motley Crue and that kind of thing.
I could probably say that's a lot more poppy and a lot more melodic than...
Well, I think this album's really, really poppy.
It is, yeah.
I think... Now, this might be because I've been listening to it for 25 years, nearly. I didn't get it exactly as it came out, but I was into it sort of late 95.
Yeah, it was actually 25 years... So a couple of days ago.
Yes. 11th of April, mm-hmm. is its 25th anniversary, which is a quarter of a century, which means as Black Sabbath's debut album, which is arguably the first heavy metal album, is 50 years old this year, this is the exact halfway point of metal up to the present. It's not as good as it was. It's all gone downhill from there.
So, why have you picked White Zombie?
So, I think that this, and this is a controversial viewpoint because I've not met anybody that agrees with me totally on this yet, but they're all wrong. I think this is the greatest metal album of all time.
Okay.
I grew up as a massive metalhead. Last time when I picked a disc, it was Bright Eyes, so it was sort of indie folk, lots of acoustic type stuff. I thought I'd go right the other end this time. And this album it's just been a complete constant. I've not stopped listening to it. I don't think there's been more than a 4-month period where I've not put it on in the last 25 years. So I've been listening to it since I was like 13 years old when I got into this. I got into it at school. It was one of these, we were all running to Korn and stuff like that and listening to Metallica and Pantera and that kind of thing. And it was one of these word of mouth things like, oh, have you heard this? And you just hear people talking about it and everybody would tape the CD off each other. So for years, I just got it as a... taped onto a cassette, finally bought it on CD in about 98-ish, so about 3 years I had it just on a cassette tape that I taped off. I think it was off my mate Nathaniel at school, but it's just always struck me as I think it's a perfect album for me. I don't think that there is a bad track on it, and it's an album that I know so well that I don't have to put it on really to listen to it. It's one of those albums like Dookie by Green Day where it's already playing in my brain most of the time, so I could just listen to it without putting it on. But I quite like the translucent purple vinyl version that I've got, so I'll put that on.
so if you started the album, turned the volume right down, and just like envisioned it in the rest of your head, and then turned the volume back up, would it match?
It may be slightly faster or slightly slower, but I think it'd be fair. It'd be around about right.
That's the ultimate test, isn't it? That's the ultimate test of if you know. Are you sure you 100% know an album?
I'd have the notes right. I just wouldn't, and all the samples and stuff, but I wouldn't necessarily have the tempo exactly spot on.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when I play gigs, I tend to play all of the songs way faster than I normally intend to. But it's this album, it's... I don't know if it's because it's been there since I was a child and always been there for me and reminds me of, you know, carefree days when I was a teenager. But it's like a comfort blanket. It's like if I've had a really, really shit day at work, I will quite often, for once, not have a podcast on the bus because I won't be able to concentrate on it. I'll put there is a 50-50 chance that I will either put this album on or a playlist of loads of pop stuff like Katy Perry and Kesha and stuff like that, which is quite a diverse, strange 50-50 chance to have, really.
But okay.
They both serve exactly the same purpose.
So would you class this as an uplifting album?
Definitely. It's like escapism. Because, I mean, obviously, I mean, if you read Rob Zombie's lyrics, they make no fucking sense whatsoever. But there's all of the imagery is, it's horror imagery.
Yeah.
You know, it's all zombies and there's a fair bit of Charles Manson in there and that kind of thing. But it's escapism. It's just like, you know, watching horror movies, reading comics, playing video games, that kind of thing. It's like I wouldn't want to meet the Manson family. That would be generally bad. They weren't very nice people. But I'm quite interested to read about it and watch documentaries on it and listen to songs that have got samples of some of them talking occasionally.
I think you might have covered the next few questions that we usually ask, which is how you discover these.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it was kind of word of mouth, sort of. I can't pinpoint the exact point that I knew about White Zombie because it was so many different conversations at school. I can definitely remember us sitting in the back of a German lesson at school singing Supercharger Heaven. And it was the same time we used to sing Deftones songs all the time and that kind of thing. But yeah, it was one I got into at school through friends.
And the first White Zombie album you listened to?
This was the first one that I heard. It wasn't the first one that I owned a legitimate copy of. Because I taped this, but then on CD for my next birthday, so January 96... I had their previous album, which is La Sexorcisto Devil Music Volume 1.
Okay.
So that was my 14th birthday. I can remember going round to my mate's house, his dad picking it up, looking at the CD and reading the first track title, which is Welcome to Planet Motherfucker. And me going, yeah.
Teenagers.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm 38 now, but I'm still a fucking teenager in my head. but it's
imagine a day as you're saying, you're a father, and then your daughter brings back like a CD, and look at the track listing, and then the first track is like the exact same.
That'd be great. I do. It's a shame that there is so much swearing in it because I think she would really like it. But if I played it to her and she started singing along, she'd get told off at nursery.
Fair enough. So a few more years before you introduce
her. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
When I've properly told her, no, you can't say motherfucker.
Yeah.
Not as much as yeah.
Yeah.
Rob Zombie says yeah on this album, I believe around 100 times in the 47 minutes of music.
I didn't count them for it.
I lost count at 80 and thought that'll do. It's about 100.
I say you probably. I'm surprised you haven't counted considering the amount of time you said listen to it.
Yeah, I keep listening.
If I give you like 10 minutes to run through the whole album in your head, you probably could. Yeah.
You just get carried away with how awesome it is. Basically. Yeah.
So my history of White Zombie is I have none. I think I remember the name and the name Rob Zombie. I know of because I've got quite a few horror obsessed fans, and I'm not much of a horror fan at all.
No, I know.
But I know the fact he's a director of quite a few films, and I know quite a few people who he's got fans that probably like him for his music, and either obsessed with his will watch everything that he's directed.
He's very divisive. He's
much younger than I expected to be. He's only like early 50s.
Yeah,
because.
Yeah.
I think, again, when I hear the word metal, I'm assuming it's the same kind of, like, the metal stuff. So, like, you got your, I think, Kiss and
But
they're into, like, their mid to, like, 60s now.
Oh, God, Gene Simmons got to be 70, I would have thought.
Yeah, and then when Rob Zombie's, like, what, about 53 or something?
Yeah, but it was, like, 20-something years later that they were releasing albums.
Yeah, so, like, and again, so it's kind of like the metal of the 90s was, like, a blind spot for me.
I shall choose many more. Right, Pantera next time. This is one of the more accessible.
Matt looks worried.
you wait till Ian brings some proper death metal.
Death metal is the genre that I'm both looking forward to and dreading at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. I think Ian may well bring at some point Entombed Left Hand Path. Which is it's a great album. I prefer their later album, DCLXVI, to Ride, Shoot Straight and Speak the Truth.
Okay. So my knowledge of like Rob Zombie is pretty much that. So yeah. I don't know much anything else about him. Listen to the album. I liked it. Good. The only thing I'll probably say about it is that I think it kind of bleeds together for me. So like, yeah. And
that's because it's all brilliant. There's no lesser tracks to make it not sound the same.
Yeah, but if you asked me the name of a song, I probably would struggle to remember which one was which.
Fair enough.
But I've been listening to it like the last week, 2 weeks or so since you've chosen it. And particularly last night as well, so I did a late night run to IKEA to get, because it...
I would imagine it's probably quite good running music.
Possibly, but I don't actually listen to music when I'm running. My running dipped a lot.
I've not run at all.
Yeah, but for the... In terms of driving up the M5/M6, it's atmospheric music. It's very atmospheric, like particularly if you're going at the speed limit.
You can't go at the speed limit on the M5. It's always roadworks. Actually, I haven't driven on it for ages because it's always roadworks. It might be clear now.
It's actually quite clear now. But it's good, like kind of good tempo, moving stuff, and like there's very much a mood. There's very much like a very good mood to it. So like you listen to it and it's like dun dun.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like considering that kind of metal for me now is basically if you just got a normal guitar and basically down tuned it to as low as you possibly go.
C sharp. So the previous album they're in standard tuning. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that this album's so much heavier is they down tuned it to C sharp.
What I'm discovering with particularly metal, how music is classed as heavy to me. The heaviness is pretty much how low it can go without sounding like a bass guitar.
there's so many different elements to heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You can have stuff that's... So, yeah, you've got... For me, it's difficult to be heavy without a lot of bass. I don't consider Norwegian black metal, which is very trebly. It's all really, really fast and badly recorded, and there's no low end in it at all. And for me, that just means that it's not heavy. Other people think it's the heaviest thing in the universe. Mm-hmm. But then you've got bands like Anaunathrak, who have kind of... They're kind of industrial black metal.
Yeah.
So they've taken the black metal style, which is very much like...
Yeah,
the vocal
style I'm dreading to one day.
Blast beat drums and really scratchy high guitars, but then they've got massive electronic bass added to it as well, and it that's fucking heavy. But yeah, you can have heavy... See, I can remember when we did the We Dig Music episode a while back on Iron Maiden. I had a word with my mate Glenn, who's a bit older than me. He's about 10 years older than me, and was into Maiden in the '80s, in their prime. And I was like, "Well, for me, this doesn't sound heavy. It's great. I love it, but I don't see it as heavy when we've got stuff like Sepultura and Pantera. You know, even non-metal stuff like Swans, which is really fucking massive low end and heavy as fuck, but it's not in any way metal. But there's loads of different perceptions of what makes something heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It can be the subject matter, it can be the speed, it can be the attitude in some cases. But for me, the sound on this with the massive guitars, I mean, there were like 80 tracks that they were using. So I think there was something like about 10 tracks of guitars on each song. I think they were doing about 5 tracks of vocals each time. And that's all just doubling and doubling and doubling the vocals to just make them sound bigger. But then all the drums and the electronic, drum loops and stuff to build it all up just makes it heavier and heavier and heavier. And that is why this album is... I mean, but at the same time, it's really accessible. So it's not as heavy as... It's not as heavy as... there's bands like Conan who are, like, doom metal.
Mm-hmm.
So Conan are really fucking low-end, really slow riffs. Whereas, I mean, the heaviest track on here is probably iZombie. The rest of it's... Most of this album is really, really danceable. You know, it's the industrial side, it's made for the dance floor in places like Nottingham Rock City and XL's or whatever the LA and New York equivalents of those are.
This is a point, this is, I don't want to stray and go too much into this because it's a point that I really want to focus on when I talk to your co-host Ian. Your co-host Ian about the album that he's picked, which you'll find out in about a month. It's quite clean in that it's very, it doesn't seem to shake up the song structure that much, so it kind of carries on with the same kind of like verse chorus stuff. And it doesn't sound erratic or
it's not like when you've got like you've got bands like Dillinger Escape Plan,
mm-hmm.
where every line of the song is in a different time signature and it's all over the place. It's really precise, but the one of the most important things in White Zombie is the groove.
Yeah,
I mean, particularly on stuff like More Human Than Human, which is like every single rock club in the world, you'll get a full dance floor as soon as they play that. And I think that's why, this is why they were so successful at the time. MTV really picked up on it. Not over here, although I didn't have MTV, so we didn't really, I'm not 100% sure, but in America, MTV actually loved them. It was Beavis and Butthead that started it. Beavis and Butthead used to have little sections where they'd have a video with them doing like proto-DVD commentary over the top of it. And they, because White Zombie have got all the visual side to it as well, you know, it's all day glow, really colourful. You know, Rob Zombie's a cartoonist and all the artwork is really distinctive and ace. So they've got the visual side, so their videos were really eye-catching. So MTV picked up on that, put it on Beavis and Butthead. Every single release that they put out, Beavis and Butthead picked up on, and it meant that White Zombie was suddenly noticing that they were selling loads of records in states in America where they'd never toured. And it's like, how have we got a following here? And it's because of Beavis and Butthead. So then,
that's how it's the first instance of viral.
Well, no, that was the plague.
Yeah.
No, there's been lots. There are lots of things that have gone viral before the internet,
mm-hmm.
but it was viral. Definitely, it was a spreading sort of exponentially across the USA. Then Headbangers Ball picked up on them, which was the main heavy metal show. But at the same time, they also used to get played on 120 Minutes, which was the alternative kind of stuff on MTV. So they got the crossover appeal. I believe they were the first band to play both Donington Monsters of Rock and the Reading Festival. So they got the crossover appeal between the sort of grungy alternative rock stuff and the straight ahead metal.
So I'm guessing like for the people that are not really into the kind of music, it'll be like, oh yeah, I can, this is my dipping into the heavier stuff.
Yeah,
whereas like all the metal kind of like heaviest metal are like, okay, this is the palate cleanser.
Yeah.
This is the palate cleanser when we need to clear our throat.
I don't think most metal fans see it as being particularly lighter than a lot of stuff. It holds its own, you know, with all of the, you know, with Pantera, with Slayer, stuff like that. But at the same time, it's cartoony enough and entertaining enough to bring in non-metal fans. Other Wee Dig Music co-host Tracy, she's not a metal fan at all, but when I was driving, we both went to a gig, I think it was when we went to see Bon Iver in London, I put this on in the car on the way back and she was like, this is actually really good. I was like, I know.
But yeah, it's probably something I probably wouldn't listen to as often as but I think perhaps for something like it's like back, like kind of background music, because I think a lot of the thing I've got, I suppose, it was like the drive and the appeal to it and just the sound of it rather than
the chug,
that's it, the chug.
yeah
so like it was like basically driving to and from IKEA on the motorway.
I think that was probably what the band were envisioning when they wrote the music. They're like, you know, this is
second tracking Swedish Furniture.
In 25 years' time, there will be a man in the West Midlands driving to and from IKEA.
Yes. Listening to this.
Yes.
But particularly like at night when you're just basically driving past the RAC centre on the M6. You see all the nice little lights of the building go past, speed past, and you just got like... Green.
Yeah.
So, and you can't say all of them. highlights.
Why can't I say all of them? All of them.
It's a very, very quick section of the podcast.
It will. There are so many bits I love on this album. Songs in particular, I mean, Supercharger Heaven is amazing. That's the one where the chorus is Devil Man, mm-hmm. Colin. It's actually calling, but it sounds like he might be singing about me. Yeah. So I'm going to go with that.
What, Colin the Devil Man?
Yes. Electric Head Part 1 and 2 are both brilliant. Supercharger Heaven, I just said that. Blood, Milk and Sky, which is the closing track, I've always absolutely loved. That's kind of a bit more melodic than the rest of it, because it's got sort of, it's got like a female sort of Indian kind of vocal sample on it and like sitars all over it. And it's a bit slower, and it's, I love the groove on it, and it's such a good album closer.
Yeah, cool. Oh, so I had a quick listen about an hour before you arrived, and actually, I didn't realise I had the album on shuffle, so I think started listening to it while I was just finishing washing up and stuff. So I was, but yeah, washing up to a White Zombie.
Excellent.
Never say you can't domesticate me with metal. So and like pretty much went on to Spotify upstairs. Just to have a bit of listening, just go through my notes, and I didn't realise I had shuffle, and then about halfway through, I'm like, this sounds quite as like sedate and soothing in comparison to it, and realised that he was actually playing the last one.
And then there was a 3-minute gap before the secret track, which, because it was the 90s, and that's what, you know, happened then. See, shuffle on Spotify, I listened to the new record by Soccer Mommy the other day, and was really disappointed in it. I was like, it's not a good album. Because that last track, it's a rubbish one to end on. Then realised I got it on shuffle. Listen to it in the right order, and it's great.
Yeah. With this album as well, I think there is like the songs kind of like bleed and kind of fade,
segue
way into each other. So it feels like it's paced quite well. The only issue is that I never realised I was onto a different song
It's
and I think that and that kind of element kind of like is probably what I meant when. Kind of hard for me to pick out certain songs and stuff, and like trying to remember which beat was which.
So. I mean, that's going to be the same with any. It's not just an album that you're unfamiliar with; it's an entire sound that is not something that you're used to listening to.
Yeah, but I think I was thinking about that. If the guitars were tuned up, slightly less distortion, and basically. Rob Zombie had a Strepsil. It'll probably kind of be the pop rock I listen to generally.
Yeah, yeah.
Just with weirder lyrics.
So if they put a capo on the 5th fret,
yeah.
For all of the guitars, turn the distortion down. Rob Zombie sings rather than roaring, and it would be Los Campesinos. No, not quite.
No. No, it's something you need an extra violin for the first bit.
There's violin-y bits on Blood, Milk and Sky. The sort of orchestrally sounds. The samples.
Oh, yeah.
But they're sampled. That's another thing about the album. The use of sampling on it is ace. It's one of their sort of main trademark type things. There's loads of dialogue samples from old... it's mostly old horror movies, but there are bits from, like, Shaft... and exploitation movies like Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill, although that's all on the previous album.
There's a whole section, actually, on the Wikipedia page which goes into depth about the samples and stuff.
Yeah. Although there are loads of samples that I don't think are credited, so they never get mentioned on websites like that.
I'm sure at some point they actually said there's supposed to be a clip from Blade Runner.
Yeah.
But I can't remember which one.
So there are lyrical themes in More Human Than Human, which is from Blade Runner, because there are sort of like, obviously More Human Than Human is the motto of the Tyrell Corporation.
Yes.
But you've also got, Rob Zombie sort of paraphrases one of the lines, I am the Nexus One, I want my life, fucker, I ain't done.
Mm-hmm.
There's always been debate over whether it's I want more life, fucker, or I want more life, father, in the movie. It's one that's quite difficult to hear.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously Rob Zombie's going to go with fucker.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's more metal.
Yeah, but no, because I think particularly with the direction his career went in, when he started going to some other horror bits, I mean, there is a lot of horror aspects. I mean, I think it comes with the Perhaps You Better Start at the Beginning, which is from The Curse of Frankenstein.
Is it? I thought that was from To the Devil a Daughter. It might be Curse of Frankenstein.
I'm going from what Wikipedia tells me.
Okay, cool.
I'm cheating.
Cool. There's a lot on there from To the Devil a Daughter.
That's apparently Supercharger Heaven that has that.
Right, okay.
But yeah, and there's loads. There's like Dawn of the Dead, Awakening of the Beast.
Yeah.
1973 Blaxploitation film Coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's at one point, I'm assuming he samples a porn film.
It's not just a porn film. Yeah, that's the start of More Human Than Human. I need to find the description of how that is. Hold on, because it's the genre of this film is extraordinary.
Café Flesh is a 1982 post-apocalyptic cult pornographic science fiction film designed and directed by Stephen Sadean.
That's the one.
Under the pseudonym Rinse Dream, and co-written by Sadean and Cherry Stahl, credited as Herbert W. Day.
Yes. Now, when you go, I mean, it's not there anymore, obviously, but when you go into Blockbuster Video, I'm imagining that there probably aren't many films in the post-apocalyptic cult pornographic science fiction section.
I don't know, there's probably loads of post-apocalyptic cult pornographic science fiction films that we just don't know about.
Tony will be doing a podcast about them next. He'll be commissioning.
He's probably already done one. Ready to come out. So asking for volunteers. But I mean, considering the direction of his films, his films are quite horror based. I think wasn't too surprising to find that his music was pretty much based in the kind of horror genre as well.
And he's continued with that with his solo stuff. I mean, basically the one of the things that I love about this album is it's kind of like sort of controlled chaos.
Yeah.
Where you've got the way they wrote it, which was the first previous albums, Rob Zombie had written all the lyrics and the rest of the band had done all the music, and they'd done it in a rehearsal room where they'd written the songs and they just jammed to write the songs. This album, he wanted to go for a more industrial sort of direction. So they sacked the original drummer. Well, he wasn't the original drummer, but the previous drummer. They'd had about six drummers over the years. And they got in John Tempesta, who's a really fucking solid drummer. And he was previously in Exodus, I believe. So they got John Tempesta in, but they also got Charlie Clouser on synths and programming. He's from Nine Inch Nails, but he also worked on a load of Marilyn Manson stuff as well. And he did loads of like industrial remixes. And basically they got all of the grooves and the electronic stuff, and then they got the guitars and the bass. Jay Younger and Shawn Yuzult she's the bass player. She was actually she formed the band with Rob Zombie, so she needs just as much credit as Rob Zombie for the whole thing, because she was there the whole way through. And basically they got Jay and Sean to write their guitar and bass parts along to the like synths and drum grooves that they'd already written. I don't think they enjoyed writing it as much, but it made a fucking amazing album. The groove on it is so much, it's just more present and more hard-hitting and more danceable than their previous stuff, which was a lot more sort of straightforward, kind of sort of psychedelic map, their previous album. I mean, a lot of the production in there, you wouldn't call them a rap metal band. You know, they're not Limp Bizkit, they're not Rage Against the Machine, but there is, it owes so much to hip-hop, particularly stuff like Public Enemy, because the layering of the samples and the drum loops is really, really like the Bomb Squad, who did Public Enemy's production. And it seems like they're sort of controlling the chaos with the electronics. And then when the band split up and Rob Zombie went solo, it's too controlled. And it's like it lost some of the chaos which made it so special.
So Lesk, basically the broth dessert, the spoiled broth was more interesting than the...
Yeah.
Basically more cooks spoiling the broth worked in this instance.
Yeah, basically. I mean, Jay Younger is he's a brilliant guitarist, but he's really messy. And I mean, Ian pointed this out when we did the White Zombie episode of We Dig Music, that John Five, who's the guitarist that Rob Zombie has with him now, who's a former Marilyn Manson guitarist, is really precise, and because of that, he's nowhere near as interesting, because you know that he's going to hit every note that he should do, but he hasn't got the feel that Jay Young has got. Jay hasn't actually... He did a little bit of producing after the band split up, but he's not formed a new band as far as we know. I believe that he's actually... His job now is he's a vinyl mastering engineer.
Okay.
So he masters records for vinyl and lives in Spain, apparently.
Oh, right.
The Rob Zombie solo stuff is, it's going along a similar sort of vein, but without, there's just something missing, and it's quite hard to pinpoint what it is, but I think it's the chaos that's missing with it.
Okay, I think we've been jumping around the usual,
all
over the place this week, but it's controlled chaos, isn't
it? It is.
It's controlled chaos of the format of the thing.
That's what I do.
But yeah, so... Saying that his solo stuff's not as good as the...
Yeah.
Because it lacks the...
I still like a lot of it. I mean, Hellbilly Deluxe, which was his first solo record, is really good. That's the one with Dracula on it, which is the track that everybody knows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got Living Dead Girl and Super Beast, which are both great. But it's just not... That's like a 7.5 out of 10, whereas this album is... 666 out of 10.
I think I want to briefly touch on some of the lyrics, because the
you know, that's what they mean, because nobody knows.
Yeah. But, to me, I don't. They're not. I think the kind of lyrics of someone who kind of does latch onto lyrics sometimes.
Yeah.
And looks into them. They're not very latchable for me personally, but they. I do quite appreciate the theme. They've got, like, a lot of theme of events.
The term that I've heard it described as, which I think is quite good, is word salad. It's just lots of words piled in a bowl. It's like I Am the Walrus. You know, Semolina Pilchard's climbing up the Eiffel Tower means fuck all. You know, so does, most of the lyrics on this album. We all go down for the sacrificial moment, crucifixion nails, stain the bed of the holy, space thing blues, diamond studded, sugar coated. Well, I am hell, miracle overloading, for example. When we did the We Dig Music White Zombie episode, me and Ian both did dramatic readings of White Zombie lyrics, because it lends itself to that, because they're absolutely preposterous. There's a lot of like film quotes and stuff and references in the lyrics. Like, you've got Real Solution number 9, the chorus goes, who will survive and what will be left of them, which is the tagline for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is actually, it's a brilliant phrase. You know, that the way, who will survive and what will be left of them, what that evokes is like, let's find out.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's... But again, I think it goes with... I think it is more about perhaps generating mood than...
Yeah.
Generating mood than perhaps like trying to make a statement or something.
Yeah.
So whereas, like, perhaps with... Say, if you take your previous pick, Bright Eyes...
Yeah.
Conor Albert deliberately wanted to do... Explore themes.
Yes.
Themes and ideas. And I think he's probably more of a lyric-based musician.
Yeah.
Whereas... Here, this is perhaps more of generating me, like, basically you're probably reading a shopping list. Probably reading a shopping list, and the song and the mood will probably still make it sound a lot better.
So if he'd needed to go and buy grease paint and monkey brains, which is one of the songs.
Packet of crisps, and some long life milk for next week.
We were talking a fair bit when I came on and we did your map pick for The Streets.
Yes.
Where A Grand Don't Come for Free is essentially realism.
Mm-hmm.
It's songs that everyone can relate to. You don't tend to get that much with White Zombie, apart from, you know, the odd little bit. I mean, I can sort of relate to the odd bit, because I am the Astro Creep, a Demolition-style Hell American Freak. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can relate to that, because it's a song about my life.
Yeah, that's the exact words I thought of when I first met you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's what you just said.
Yeah, yeah. An Astro Creep, a Demolition-style Hell American Freak.
Yeah.
From Polesworth.
But I think there's like an element of the theatrical with them. Because
no, it's not an act, it's all real.
Yeah. But it's like their look, like their like look is pretty much. It's not Kiss extravagant, but there's definitely
they've got an image.
They've got an image.
They are the coolest looking band in the fucking universe.
Yeah,
it's all. I mean, if you're not familiar with what White Zombie looked like in 1995, it's worth Googling. If you are familiar with the wrestler Macho Man Randy Savage, Rob Zombie is him. They have never been in... And he's got a similar voice. I've just realised this. Fucking hell. They not only look the same, but they sound the same.
Oh, yeah.
They say yeah a lot. There was a WrestleMania the Album, and the song that... Macho Man Randy Savage had on there. The Tower of Power to sweep the be sour, funky like a monkey, oh yeah, could be a White Zombie lyric.
Hey, Macho Man Randy Savage had his own rap album.
He did?
Yeah, so with the amazing Be A Man song, which is basically awesome. A fucking disc. Which
has anybody picked that yet? Is that a Matt pick? Is that a future Matt pick? Because it really should be. Hold on, that's going to be Chris.
Has crossed my mind.
That's going to be Chris from Without a Mouse, isn't it? Because it's a wrestling one.
That would be Chris Wilson, yeah. Be a man, Hogan. But and for anyone who's ever keeping track, you can like tick your tally box because I'm going to mention the artwork because me missing it is like because the artwork to the album itself and in front of me, Colin has it. It's if I'm honest, it's not the best art we've had on
the cover. The front cover isn't. The CD is better.
Yeah.
Than the I've got the vinyl version here. The CD they weren't concentrating on the vinyl because it was 1995 and no one was buying vinyl. The CD has got like a big fold out inlay where there's like an illustration for every song.
Okay.
Which is really cool. Which I was when I finally got the I bought the record off eBay about 2 years ago. And when I finally got it, I was a little bit disappointed that there wasn't an insert with all that artwork. But yeah, because Rob Zombie's an artist and he, you know, just sort of cartoony type. Very, very stylized. If you have seen Beavis and Butthead Do America, the scene in the desert where they are hallucinating and there's all like devils dancing on people's tongues and strange stuff happening. That is, it's not actually, I always thought it was Rob Zombie that had actually drawn it. It's based on Rob Zombie's artwork, and it includes, there is actually the back cover of the previous album animated in that section.
Okay.
But yeah, I was under the impression that Rob Zombie had actually drew it and animated it, but he hadn't. It was just based on his sketches.
So it's a lot more interesting than basically the kind of washed out band.
Yeah.
It does look like something I probably would have done when I was in year eight, messing with Photoshop.
This was 1995. That was the height of Photoshop skill at that point to do that kind of filter. And that this picture here that you can't see on the podcast because it's an audio podcast, that's kind of the style.
Oh, okay.
That you draw inside, which
is... For people who are...
Listening to the podcast and not in this room. Which
it's basically like a nice little picture of ducks next to a little pond.
It is.
And
it is.
Like Rob Zombie...
Clouds.
Yeah, there's clouds. Rob Zombie's feeding some ducks.
It is not.
Yeah.
It's some kind of monster dude with an X on his head, arms coming out of his eyes, a black eye, quite tight pants, weirdly. And boxing gloves.
Yeah. No ducks.
But yeah, if you Google Rob Zombie artwork, you'll find loads of, like, you know, crazy drawings and stuff.
Have you ever seen them live?
I've never seen White Zombie live. I saw Rob Zombie in 1998 on the Hellbilly Deluxe tour, which was his first solo album. And he played a lot of White Zombie tracks, which mostly stuff off this album. He did a few... off the previous album, nothing from before that, because they're almost like a band where they sort of pretend that they didn't exist before their last two albums, despite having like two or three albums before that, because they changed so much in between them.
Yeah.
They never used to play anything before Les Exorcisto live. But yeah, we saw them at Wolverhampton Civic Hall, went with a load of big group of friends from the pub that we used to go to when I was 16, illegally. And so it was Rob Zombie supported by Monster Magnet and the Backyard Babies. Awesome gig, absolutely brilliant. We were right on the front barrier for the whole gig. End of the set, Rob Zombie saluted me and the bass player gave me one of his plectrums, which was pretty cool. Then we
still have it?
I have somewhere. I think it might be in a box of stuff under my bed. But yeah, we went round the side to the stage door to try and meet some of the bands, see if we could get some CDs signed. And Monster Magnet were the main ones that we were talking to. We didn't actually see any of Rob Zombie's band. There was a big box came out, and we have a theory that he was in the box. But there was a guy that we used to hang out with then called Gumby. It's not his real name for obvious reasons. Gumby does not have good eyesight. And so we were all talking to Monster Magnet, who are, in their own right, absolutely fantastic band. Really, really sort of influential sort of stoner rock band. And we were quite, you know, excited that we were getting to talk to them. And then Gumby comes along, starts talking to them as if they are in Rob Zombie's band, because he can't tell the difference, because to him it's just a fucking blur. So he was like, oh yeah, what's it like being, you know, touring with Rob? How's it been going with, like, recording the album, the reception to the new stuff compared to White Zombie? And they just got really pissed off and then left. More like... I haven't seen Rob Zombie since then. I've only seen him once. And by all reports that I've had, I'm not that bothered now.
Does he still tour? He still tours,
but he is still really energetic on stage, but he concentrates way more on the stage show than getting the words out. And he's all out of breath and missing the words. And there was a live version of this album released by Rob Zombie and his touring band a couple of years ago, and I listened to it earlier. And it's like the music's played slightly too precise. Other than that, all the songs are identical, apart from the fact that Rob Zombie's probably getting about 60% of the lyrics out in the right places.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I wouldn't have released that. They are one of those absolute, if I had a time machine, I would go back to 1995 and go and see White Zombie playing somewhere like Las Vegas. When they had real, really cool stage show with loads of lights and video screens and you know, monsters on stage and stuff like that. But when they came over to the UK, they had to bring a stripped down version, so they couldn't quite bring the full production. So I've seen videos of their gigs in the States. I've got a live bootleg called White Zombie Totally Destroy Las Vegas, which is amazing. And yeah, if I could go back to that gig, that'd be perfect. So I need a time machine. So if anybody knows where we can get a time machine, let me know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've got a whole list of gigs I want to go to.
Yep. And you can let him know by going to @.
We'll do that in a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. So you've covered Rob Zombie's solo stuff.
Yeah.
But in terms of other White Zombie albums, any other tracks, if people like this?
Yeah, so Le Sexorcisto, Devil Music Volume 1, which was the album before this, is absolutely brilliant. It's definitely worth getting. Me and Ian actually disagree on which one the best album is. He thinks Le Sexorcisto is the better album. I think it's probably because he heard that one first. Because Ian's like 4 years older than me, so he would have picked up on them before I did.
It's just like Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz.
Exactly.
My theory is that, and I might have been disproved, but I kind of block it out, but whichever film of those you saw first, you prefer, and I saw Hot Fuzz first.
I prefer Spaced, because I saw that first. Mm. But yeah, they're all good. Apart from the end of the world. Is it End of the World?
At World's End.
World's End.
I've not watched that one yet.
All right. It's just, it's got some really good bits in it, but it's not anywhere near up to the standard of the other two.
Mm-hmm.
Le Sexorcisto Devil Music Volume 1 is brilliant. Definitely worth getting. Hellbilly Deluxe, Rob Zombie's first solo album, is good. That's worth getting as well. It's worth watching House of a Thousand Corpses, which was his first movie.
I might skip that because I'm not.
Yeah, you wouldn't like it.
No.
Sorry, you don't like films anyway. You only like TV series.
True.
And if you're interested, it's quite interesting after you've listened to all this to go back to there's a box set called Ink Cave from NYC, which is their really early noise rock stuff where they're sounding like the Cramps and early Sonic Youth and Butthole Surfers, that kind of vibe. That is worth a listen as well.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, but mainly listen to Astro Creep 2000. Because it's fucking brilliant.
Repeatedly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to give it another listen. I've got a feeling that it's one of those repeated listen ones. You might have a slightly biased opinion.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you might do, but I think once you get used to the kind of like the chug
part
of it and start delving into it a bit more, it's probably going to be more rewarding to listen to.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And it's so dense that you'll notice different things each time. I've been listening to it for 25 years. It was only about probably a year ago that I realised that there's a track called Creature of the Wheel where there's, in the lyrics, there are some bits written down that I just thought weren't in the song. And they are. They're just really low in the mix and really, really quiet. I thought it got like a big instrumental bit, but it's got really, really low-level vocals.
It's like me with the Grand Theft Auto 3, where I always seem to discover new things after listening for so long. It's time for the important part of the podcast, which is the don't you dare pick the 11 minutes.
It's not 11 minutes. See, you didn't do the what's your least favourite bit of the album.
Because
that would be the 3 minutes of silence in between Blood, Milk and Sky and the secret track, which is entitled Where the Sidewalk Ends, the Bug Parade Begins. Mm-hmm. But it's at sort of a extended but more jammed out bit of Blood, Milk and Sky. I wish they'd just carried it on.
The Bug Parade. Is that the alternative to the Black Parade?
Yes, better than the Black Parade.
To join the Bug Parade.
It's got less My Chemical Romance in it.
the Hall of Fame. Those listening for the first time, it's where I ask the guests to pick a song from the album to be in most lies on their Spotify playlist forever and ever. And Colin has form. Colin has form. Yeah, my affinity for track length, which actually has a name. So if you listen to the Dan Byrne episode, John Porrible referred to it as the Latham limit, into which a song reaches a point of it being too long. Nothing here.
What minute does it reach the Latham limit? Is it five?
I think it depends on the song, because there's a song on the first. There's a 7 minute song on the first Los Campesinos album,
right? But you'll forgive them for anything.
Well, yeah, because they're fucking Los Campesinos. I think it depends on the actual song, because, like, for example, I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody is like...
But do you ever need to hear Bohemian Rhapsody again?
I probably can actually listen to it.
Yeah.
I could probably do it in my head like you do with this.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But I think it does depend on certain songs on the length and stuff.
Yeah,
but,
fair enough.
I don't think there's nothing like...
This hasn't got that many long songs on it. No, you know, the last track is long, but that's because it's got a secret track and a big gap.
But the song that you're going to pick and nominate...
Well, I've actually changed my mind.
Oh, okay.
Because I was going to go with Supercharger Heaven.
Yeah.
But I think Electric Head Part 1, The Agony, encapsulates the album better.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Supercharger Heaven is a brilliant, like, standalone single, and it's great. Electric Head Part 1 being the first track on the album, you've got that intro bit where you've got the samples at the start, then the like horror film organ that all goes out of tune and then it sort of comes in with the song and he's really stompy and ace. I think that's probably more representative of the rest of the album. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with that one.
So you're going to go with Electric Head Part 1.
So it's a good job I didn't update it on your spreadsheet the other night, which I was going to do. Now I have access.
I'll just make sure it's read-only.
Yeah.
Well, the spreadsheet, that's no longer going to be
used. Yeah, we're not using it anymore.
No, we're not using it anymore. But, so Electric Head Part 1, that's it. We're coming to the end of the podcast.
Indeed.
Yeah. And
sorry, I'll be back for another one soon.
Yeah, I can't get rid of you.
I know.
Colin, you've got plenty of stuff to plug. So
one or two things.
Yeah, one or two things.
So I've got these podcasty things. Mm-hmm. You heard about them? They're a bit like radio shows. They're pretty cool.
But
better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do two podcasts. One is Free With This Month's Issue, which is basically it's old free CDs from magazines, such as, you know, like Kerrang, Enemy, Q, that sort of thing. Plan B magazine, as Mr. Latham over here is going to be joining us to talk about soon.
Yeah, a magazine I've never read, but...
but if you it's got music that you know on it, so that's fine.
But if you want to find out why I didn't read any music magazines, you're going to have to listen to the episode that I'm going to be on.
Which is in about a month's time, I think, if I've worked out the schedule right. That you can find us on Twitter at This Month's Issue. You can find all our episodes by searching Free With This Month's Issue in your podcast app of choice, or Spotify, or we're on the We Made This network now, so you can go on the We Made This thing. There's already links on this podcast thing and stuff. We've also got a website, which is WeDigPodcast.com, where you can also find We Dig Music, which is my other podcast, where me, Ian, who's on in a couple of weeks, and Tracy, who was on a couple of weeks ago,
Which we definitely have recorded.
Yes. Hint. Not recording in 2 days' time, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I've brought her microphone here. We just talk about music, where we pick a...
That you dig.
Yeah. Well, usually. Sometimes Tracy's picked it and me and Ian don't, like Camera Obscura.
Which I quite like.
I didn't mind them at all. I just could not find anything interesting to say about them.
Yeah.
If you want to follow We Dig Music on Twitter, it's at We Dig Music PCast. If you want to follow me on Twitter, just randomly talking bollocks, and I talk bollocks on all three of them because I just switch between the Twitter accounts at random. Sometimes reply to things with one of the other accounts without realising it.
Yeah. It's a great game of what was the last thing Colin used and then forgot to change back to.
Yep. My own personal one is at Mogwai Fear Satan. We've also got an Instagram for Free With This Month's Issue. Not for any of the others yet, but that's Free With This Month's Issue on Instagram, where we do pictures and things.
Mm-hmm.
That's what all the cool kids are doing. Pictures.
Yeah, I'm too old, and this podcast is too old for Snapchat.
I don't understand Snapchat at all.
No, not since Instagram pretty much copied it. Colin, thank you yet again for turning up. Turning up again, bringing up, and to be fair, bringing in your podcast recording equipment.
Yes. Thank you for coming in, recording the podcast again.
Yeah, doing all the work, it's fine.
You're mixing the fucker.
Damn it. Always a pleasure, and thank you for introducing me to the world of metal.
No worries.
90s metal.
We will continue. I've enjoyed it. Thanks very much, Matt.
Yeah.
Everybody. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
You've been listening to Pick a Disc, and I've been your host, Matthew Labour. Our theme music is Pump by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Pick a Disc is hosted by the We Made This Podcast Network, and you can find them on www.spreaker.com/user/WeMadeThis. You can find the Pick a Disc show site on www.spreaker.com/show/pickadisc. You can find us on all the usual social media type places like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter under Pick a Disc. You can also email us on pickadisc@gmail.com. Until next time, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.
Previously on the We Made This Network. Cinemortuary.
So if you're going to get him a birthday present, way too late. Sorry, Dave, I didn't get you a birthday present.
So I'll take one in April.
Okay.
There's some WrestleMania spoilers then, you dick.
So my pick this week is a little present to you, Dave, because you've had a hard time with some of our picks, you know, recently. Chris?
He gave us a video game.
Yes.
Sorry, two blokes in their early 30s that can't play a video game. I said that to a room full of people earlier, and they were just like, what the fuck?
It's
is a room full of blokes.
We've got lives. I mean, what do them blokes in the 30s
You're not
do?
Working at the minute.
Well, no, I'm not. No, probably the way it's fucking going, I still won't do it. This episode goes out.
What'd you pick?
Predator 2.
Ah.
Make It So, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
I just think she was awful from day one. She didn't get any better. And, I mean, her quite naff death as well, where she has a brief little skirmish with Seven and gets kicked to her death. I was a bit like, well, you know what? I care so little about that character that that's fairly fitting, really.
That's good that that's out the way.
Yeah, shrug. That's exactly... Yeah, me too. I was like, thank God for that. Like, let's get on with everything else now. Now she's gone.
We Buy Records.
Well, I've seen some people saying that they're not posting anything out at the moment because they don't want to cause unnecessary burden on the postal service.
A friend of ours is a postal worker, and he said at the end of last week that that week just gone had been like Christmas in the sorting office, and not in a good way.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.